Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. We've had a rather significant insult to our intelligence in the form of the remarks by the President of the United States yesterday at his so-called Countering Violent Extremism Summit. And I wanted to do a little bit of a truth squad with one of our go-to guys on matters involving the traditions, the teachings, the practices, the institutions of authoritative Islam. He is Stephen Coughlin, a major now retired from the United States Army. He is a man who formerly served as the duty expert for the Joint Chiefs of Staff on matters involving the enemy's ideology, Sharia, and what it meant for all of us. Steve is today, I'm very pleased to say, a senior fellow with the Center for Security Policy and the author of a book now due out in March, happily, called Catastrophic Failure. Steve Coughlin, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us, sir.
Glad to be here.
Steve, I just want to bounce off of you a couple of the things that the president said yesterday that I think require, at the very least, correction and challenge, for that matter. He said that it is a lie when leaders of the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda describe themselves as, quote, holy warriors in defense of Islam, unquote. How would you respond to that?
Well, I would have to respond the same way parts of the Islamic world would respond on that. Now, listen, we both know and we both have friends who are Muslim who do not really agree at all with what groups like Al-Qaeda do. But that's an entirely different thing than to say that this has nothing to do with Islam. For example, last week, Al-Azhar said, despite the fact that they condemn what Al-Qaeda does, what they do does not constitute blasphemy or does not constitute apostasy. So even as bad as the actions of Al-Qaeda are, even Al-Azhar said that that doesn't put them outside of Islam. And here you have the entire, here you see Al-Qaeda under the name of Islam, clearly quoting Islamic law and clearly acting on behalf in that manner, in a manner that is historically true to what has happened in the past. And we're being told that whatever you're seeing happening is not true. This is like Obi-Wan being told these aren't the droids you're looking for. It's as real as it gets.
Yeah, and the question that was further begged was the president insisted that such individuals are terrorists who have, quote, perverted Islam, unquote. And Steve Coughlin, I want you to sort of address that both from the perspective of your own, study of what the authorities of Islam have been saying about these various practices, including the very barbaric ones now most prominently associated with the Islamic State. But also tie in, if you would, some of the comments that President el-Sisi of Egypt recently made.
Well, I think there's a couple things there. There's a couple fault lines, and let's say that inside the Muslim world, the biggest fault line is some of the things that Al-Qaeda are doing, or let me say Al-Qaeda in Iraq or ISIS. What they're doing is they're doing things that recognize Wahhabi Islam, that recognize what's something called takfirism, where that a Muslim has the right to kill another Muslim as if they were apostates. And this is the big fault line that you see going on inside the Muslim world. About a month ago, Sisi went to Al-Azhar University and gave a speech where he said that the problem we have in the Islamic world, meaning referring to him, is that there are 1.3 billion Muslims, but there's 7.2 billion non-Muslims. I think he said something like that. And I think he was raising the point that the rest of the world is starting to get really to the point where they don't want to have to deal with us anymore. And he basically pointed out the fact that the problem was Sharia, as has been interpreted by the imams. And he was saying that directly to the imams at Al-Azhar.
Yeah, which is a really important point. He wasn't seeing this in a sort of rhetorical way to the Islamic State or to Al-Qaeda or even to the Muslim Brotherhood. He was going directly to the people who are considered to be, Steve Coughlin, the authorities of the faith, right?
Absolutely. Al-Azhar is considered the most prestigious center of Islamic learning in the world. It is the Princeton, Harvard, Yale, Oxford, Sorbonne wrapped into one. You go there and you get your degree in Islamic law. You wear a little hat that sets you apart from everybody else. This is the it for Islam. And he went and talked to those imams, and he told them that their interpretation of Sharia through the ages needs to be reconsidered. He was not saying that they were radical. He was recognizing who they were and realizing that something has to change.
So what does that mean when we hear the president or when we hear John Kerry or when we hear David Cameron, the British prime minister, or we hear François Hollande, the French president, using this sort of formulation that these people, these extremists, violent extremists, as the president would have it, are perverting Islam or are hijacking Islam. How do you square that, Steve, with the fact that what these people are doing is acting on the teachings and traditions and so on as defined by the authorities, not just today, but over the past 1400 years?
Well, the first thing I'd like to do is point out the fact that these are the same people who tell you don't have a right to make a comment about Islam. And the first thing they do is they make a judgment about Islam that's completely ignorant. It's completely ignorant, both historically, factually, and based on what Islamic law says. So they're hypocrites, because the first thing they do is say, you don't have a right to have a comment on it. And the second thing they do is they pass a global judgment that leaves these people harmless, the jihadis who are acting. I mean, if we want to have allies in the Muslim world, and there are a lot of Muslims out there who understand what's going on here, we at least have to speak truth to power, or to the powers that run our Western world. The issue is, in the Muslim world, these people know who these people are. It's the West that doesn't know who these people are, because our Western leaders have made it their decision to blind us from this existential threat.
And in that regard, Steve, let me just hit you with two other things that the president said. He said, as he has in the past, but he reiterated it in this context at the Countering Violent Extremism Summit at the White House yesterday, that, quote, we are not at war with Islam, unquote. To the extent you've served with the Joint Chiefs of Staff, you've been tracking what these jihadists, these Islamic supremacists are up to for quite a long time. And Steve, is it possible that the president is mistaking the fact that he does not want us to be at war with Islam with the reality that the Islamic world, at least that part of it that embraces this authoritative practice of the faith, not all Muslims, but those that do, are very much at war with us?
Well, I just think that's a manifest fact. I mean, and that's what I don't understand. It may well be the case that there are lots of Muslims who are not at war with us, but we've been fighting a war for the last 15 years against people, or 14 years, against people who have unconditionally, unilaterally made it very clear that they're at war with us because of Islam. And I think one of the big problems is that if you take a look at some of the people who help our administration, our U.S. government on understanding Islam, they come from the Muslim Brotherhood, where they basically say in the documents that our Justice Department put in evidence that they work with us to deceive us. So we don't have to make some global statement about all Muslims to make the global statement about the people our senior leaders work with, that they see themselves as part in a long-term war where their objective is to destroy our decision-making.
And that includes, of course, some of the people who were in this Countering Violent Extremism Summit with whom the president has been saying, these are our outreach partners in communities like Boston and Minneapolis and Los Angeles. Steve, let me close with the money quote here. The president said in the course of this summit yesterday, quote, no religion is responsible for terrorism, unquote. Less than a minute. How would you respond to that, given what you know about the traditions of the Sharia-driven jihadists?
Well, I think it's just crazy because it just belies the facts that present themselves right before us. And the first thing I would point out is that the OIC has served an instrument to the United Nations on terrorism that says that the Islamic world defines terrorism according to Islamic law, and jihad doesn't constitute terrorism. In the technical sense, the president's right, but according to our law on terrorism, he's wrong.
Steve, your insights in this are most appreciative, as are all your work with us at the Center for Security Policy. Keep it up. We'll talk with you again very soon. Next up, Tom Rogan joins us to talk about the roots of this jihadism and experience elsewhere encountering it. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the Center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states. One that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say, joined for the first time, I think, here at Secure Freedom Radio by a man I've long admired and have hoped to have on before now. It's a distinct pleasure to welcome to our microphones Tom Rogan. He is a contributor to National Review and to the Daily Telegraph. He freelances elsewhere, notably for Fox News, and he is the Steamboat Institute's Tony Blankley Chair, the first to hold that very distinguished position. And I'm delighted to have him with us. Tom, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio.
Frank, good to be on with you. Thank you very much. And again, I would reciprocate, although you're a slightly senior level than me, been a big fan of yours for a long time. So it's great to be with you.
Well, that's kind of you. Let me get your take, if I can, on where we find ourselves at the moment with respect to a threat the president insists has nothing to do with Islam, that is being brought to us by people who are perverting it, that are, you know, not the religious leaders or at least certainly holy warriors that they profess to be, especially based, Tom, on the long and difficult experience that Britain has had with some of these chaps, especially this problem of countering their operations inside the United Kingdom.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it is quite striking that the president is so unwilling to identify the specific ideological foundations, whether it be Salafism or on the Iranian side, Khomeinism, that are driving imams to pursue at a basic level very extremist interpretations of, you know, civil society, and again, founded in their interpretation of Islamic doctrines. And from that, you know, other imams recruiting people to a cause of jihad that has a foundation in Islam, as they see it. And so the problem is, if you're failing to identify those two specific elements, then you're not able to develop any kind of coherent strategy that drives you forward. I mean, it's tantamount to, you know, imagine during the Cold War, if we'd refused to identify various communist terrorist groups in Europe, and we'd simply said, well, they're violent extremists, then how could you infiltrate them? How can you develop a strategy that actually begins to get to grips with where they organize, how they orientate their ideology, how they pursue that ideology in actions?
We're visiting with Tom Rogan. He is a very active contributor to the national security and public policy debate, notably at the National Review and with the Telegraph in London. He is also frequently a guest at Fox News. He is the Tony Blankley Chair at the Steamboat Institute, a marvelous organization in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. And you were talking about this parallel, and I think it is so apt, Tom, between our own time and the Cold War, the clarity particularly that Ronald Reagan brought to not only contesting what the communists were up to, but his determination to destroy Soviet communism, which of course became part and parcel of a strategy that was sort of codified in something he called National Security Decision Directive 75. This has inspired, as you may know, a strategy we're now calling the Secure Freedom Strategy to try to apply a similar kind of clarity and all national instruments of power brought to bear against these enemies. And I just wonder whether that, in light of historical experience and your own insights, that might not make a lot of sense at the moment.
Well, I think it doesn't. It's not simply about making a lot of sense. I think it's a necessity. Because if you look around, this is the thing, Frank, that is so striking, I think, to so many of us. Just, it's not like this is in question, that this is a global struggle with particular brands of Islam. It is a proof that is borne out with Boko Haram now ripping apart West Africa, Cameroon, Al-Shabaab in Somalia, a different Jamal al-Islamiyya down in Indonesia, Yemen, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, Iranian border treaty rebels there, Lebanon, Iraq. Again, on both the, you know, Salafi jihadist side with groups like ISIS, Al-Qaeda, other national, there are so many, you could go on, Israel, Hamas, I mean, you can go on and on and on. And the reality is proven across the world, and it's proven in the blood of innocent people, predominantly Muslims, but of course, Egyptian Christians, you know, people, atheists, everyone who is not kneeling to a specific, and that's why you see the ISIS videos with the kneeling. It's all of this, again, it is so clear what we face. And the president's intransigence and his, not simply intransigence about refusing to face down that, his actual pride in sort of taking this alternate path that he seems to believe, or he genuinely does believe, that his approach is enlightened. I mean, it is striking, and it's very concerning, especially in the context now with returning jihadists to Europe.
It is, and quite likely to this country as well. Tom Rogan, let me turn to a different topic on which you've also been expressing yourself recently, including on the pages of National Review. We're watching in perhaps slow motion, but the steady grinding dismantling of Ukraine by the Russians. They have now used once again a ceasefire to cover what appears to be another brazen seizure of territory. Where are we with respect to a unified alliance opposition to this predation? And if not, how do we get to it?
Well, I think the big issue here is that if you consider what is happening, it's not just a symptom of the reality on the ground in eastern Ukraine, but it's a problem across Eastern Europe. And the dynamic in which President Putin very successfully is trying to play off European weakness, both in European defense budgets having been stripped for a long time, but also their reliance on Russian energy, and their fear that he could be capable of anything. He is manipulating that belief against the Obama administration's strategic hesitation doctrine. And so I think, you know, unfortunately, things are probably going to get a lot worse before they get better. I mean, the big thing at the moment, obviously, is the fighting around Debaltseve in eastern Ukraine, which is a key highway. It's right on an intersection of highways that goes south towards Crimea and east-west, so it allows him to carve out that territory. And again, also, what I think is very important, which people fail to realize, is that, again, it's not just about Ukraine. It's also about nations like Estonia, NATO members, where the Russian intelligence services are very aggressively stepping up operations. And if anyone thinks it is limited to Ukraine, you just have to look at what happened today and what has been happening in very much more regular occurrences. The Russians flying bomber missions. They flew a bomber mission south of very close to the British coast, southern coast today. They've been doing it in around Alaska. You know, there's an absence of cohesive strategy, and it is empowering Vladimir Putin, just as, you know, Sunni Islamist groups in Iran are being empowered by the strategic hesitation of the United States in that regard.
Yeah. You know, I'm struck by your choice of that term, strategic hesitation. I think the national security strategy dressed it up as strategic patience. But the point is, whatever one calls it, it is being perceived by our enemies as a flashing green light to engage in aggression.
And by our allies as a flashing, you know, red light of our weakness.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, what seems so obvious, I think, to commonsensical people, and notably you, who have it in abundance, Tom Rogan, is if you behave this way, you're going to have far fewer friends and far more enemies. And that does not bode well for the national security of this country or freedom-loving people on both sides of the pond, notably. You personify that spirit, Tom, handsomely, and we're delighted to have you as the Tony Blankley Chair at the Steamboat Institute. You are always welcome on this program, and I hope that we'll be able to get you back further to discuss these very important topics and insights, particularly on how what's been happening in Europe lately really ought to underscore the need for a different approach by us. Sidney Powell is our guest next. We'll be talking with her about the Holder Department of Justice and whether it might be any better under Loretta Lynch. That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn.
Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, President Obama said, "It is a lie when leaders of the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda describe themselves as holy warriors in defense of Islam." He insisted that they are terrorists who have perverted Islam. "We are not," he proclaimed, "at war with Islam." Mr. Obama even declared, "No religion is responsible for terrorism." Someone is lying, all right. Unfortunately, it is our president, not our jihadist enemies. The truth was recently exposed by another president, Muslim Egypt's elected leader, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. He blamed the authorities of Islam, not terrorists, for antagonizing the entire world. In other words, it is their practice of the faith, not terrorists, who are the problem. Our president's lying to the American people about that reality amounts to material support for our enemies. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
When we decided to rename this radio station, we came up with one word, one very big word, answer. That's because we know our listeners better than anybody. We know you wake up every day with an insatiable appetite for news and information. But more than that, you want to know what to make of it all. No matter what happens, if it matters to you and you listen long enough, you'll learn what it means and different ways to think about it. That's why we're here. Do this better than any station in town. Welcome aboard. AM 1260, The Answer.
Navigating this world when you are undereducated can be difficult. I'm Dr. Ben Carson, and I know this for a fact. When I was growing up, my family lived in dire poverty, and because of my poor learning skills, my classmates called me dummy. My life began to turn around when my mother encouraged me to read. I went from the bottom of my class to graduating from Yale University and becoming the youngest director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. I know how important it is to nurture a child's dream.
When I grow up, I want to become a scientist.
I want to be a doctor, just like Ben Carson.
I hope to become an engineer.
I want to be a teacher or maybe a broadcaster.
The Carson Scholars Fund is impacting schools across the nation by encouraging children to read, write, and excel at math and science so they can realize their dreams. We need your help. To learn more about the Carson Scholars Fund and to donate, visit our website at carsonscholars.org.
After all, the person who has the most to do with your success is you.
This is Frank Affney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to welcome as well Sidney Powell. She is a previous guest and former assistant U.S. attorney in Texas and in the Eastern District of Virginia. She has written a compelling book about her experiences inside the Department of Justice. It is entitled Licensed to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Department of Justice. And we've had her on before. We're always pleased to have her back. Sidney, first of all, I think it's Happy New Year. I think this is our first visit. Glad to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Frank. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Good. Well, I'm anxious to get your thoughts, speaking of corruption in the Department of Justice, about the prospective replacement for Eric Holder, Loretta Lynch. I know you've been writing about her for a bit and have expressed some concerns about it. Talk about those concerns and what United States senators weighing her nomination to be the next Attorney General of the United States should have in mind.
Yes, I am very concerned about her nomination. While at many levels I think she is a good person, I see her only as continuing the same sort of protection of the president and what I would call corruption of justice that we've seen in Eric Holder. I've written several articles about her for the New York Observer at observer.com, and the most recent talks about a horrific case that I've discovered in the Eastern District of New York, her district, in which two former U.S. attorneys have written her, pleading with her to review this outrageous prosecution and conviction. and she has refused to look at the case.
Talk a little bit about the case and what it suggests about, well, her, shall we say, somewhat selective application of justice.
Yes, she told the senators at her hearing, I was at her confirmation hearing, and she told them that she would look at each case fairly and give it a full evaluation. That's precisely what people have asked to be done in this case, where a young Harvard grad who was CEO of Friedman's Jewelers has been in prison for 6 years for drawing his salary and a bonus that were obviously agreed and knowingly paid to him by the company. But according to the prosecutor's unprecedented theory of the case, he somehow committed a fraud by and, quote, stole his salary. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's over-criminalization at its worst. But the prosecutors in the Eastern District ran what I call a terrorist prosecution. They made incredibly sweet plea deals with the guys who had actually stolen money and done things wrong, and got them to testify to implicate Brad Stinn, when Brad Stinn had done nothing wrong except try to run the company with these guys doing the criminal acts that he didn't know about.
This sounds bizarre on its face, Sydney. Is there some explanation for why the prosecutor would have behaved in this fashion and why Loretta Lynch is, I guess, the supervisor as the U.S. attorney in that district, would not be willing to reconsider?
She was not the supervisor when it was originally prosecuted. It started back in 2002 with the Corporate Fraud Task Force that was such a big deal, and they were looking for CEOs and CFOs to have their scalps nailed to the wall. And that's exactly what happened in this case. They just nailed a CEO because they wanted a CEO and to make an example out of something that really wasn't a crime. But it's the same sort of things that I talk about in my book, License to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Department of Justice, because we have a big problem with both over-criminalization, making crimes out of things that aren't, and prosecutors sort of making up cases and facts as they go along to get the conviction. They're just completely out of control. And what concerns me about her is, after telling the senators she'd be fair and careful in things, she has already refused repeatedly to re-examine this case. And we need somebody that's willing to re-examine everything in the Department of Justice right now and the way it goes about its business.
Since there is, among other things, so much corruption in the organization, Loretta Lynch is, of course, also under scrutiny because she has indicated to the senators that she would be comfortable carrying forward the kind of program that Eric Holder has engaged in. Speaking of selective prosecution, prosecutorial discretion, I think, is the formal term for it, that has been used to justify a number of things, including, endorsing the president's selective adherence to the law with respect to this issue of immigration and extending an executive amnesty. What did you hear in the back and forth with the senators in her confirmation hearing on that score that Sidney Powell may cause us further reason to be apprehensive about this appointment?
Well, she thought the Office of Legal Counsel's explanation of the executive amnesty provision was valid and reasonable, and that it provided a reasonable framework. I don't even understand what that means. That's the word she kept using throughout the hearing. There's a legal framework for it. Well, law is law. I mean, either it's legal or it's not. I don't understand even what she kept meaning by the term framework. But the executive amnesty order that the Judge Andrew Hanen in Brownsville just enjoined, simply the injunction maintains the status quo. So there still exists prosecutorial discretion as to whether to deport anyone or not. And obviously they're not going to be deporting these people. The reason he granted the injunction is because it goes far beyond the exercise of prosecutorial discretion and actually created and conferred benefits on illegal aliens that only Congress has the right to do.
Yeah. Let me turn to one other issue, which you've also addressed at The Observer. The headline is intriguing, Don't Play Poker with Loretta Lynch. Talk a bit about some of the other aspects of her testimony that struck you as, well, troubling, if sort of a continuation of the very troubling conduct of her predecessor, if she does, in fact, get confirmed, Eric Holder.
What I found especially troubling was her general refusal to answer any question directly. I can't tell you the number of times I heard the phrase, "if I'm so fortunate as to be confirmed as Attorney General," that preceded the answer to almost any question. And then the answers were simply circuitous, talking about a legal framework or just kind of putting the question back on the senators or making a point as to what she'd done in her past. There were very few questions she answered with a yes or no or anything that anyone else would consider a valid answer to a question.
So artful dodging, in other words. And yet, as you pointed out, that there are a number of very fundamental issues, including fundamental liberties, as you put it, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom from harassment by an agency of the government because of your political beliefs, that she was being queried about, and yet seemingly bobbed and weaved rather than addressed.
So it was an exercise in deft parrying. I've never seen such excellent parrying. And at the same time, she kept a warm and open demeanor, seeming like she would actually review things. And I know lots of people think very well of her, including some criminal defense lawyers in her district. But the more I've dug into it, the more I've uncovered lots of other people who don't have that experience at all and are very concerned about it.
Your book, of course, Licensed to Lie, was actually cited in the course of the hearing, I'm very pleased to say, and I hope will be a rubric for evaluating this nomination before senators are actually asked to vote on it. As you understand it now, Sidney Powell, how does this nomination stand? Is it likely to be approved in the near future?
I think it's going to be very close. Frankly, I think the judge's order in Texas enjoining the execution of the amnesty program right now actually helps tend toward her confirmation, because a judge has stepped in to deal with it, and it's not the Department of Justice at this point, other than the fact I'm sure they're going to appeal it. But I know it's close. I think it's going to be very close, and she may not be confirmed. I'm going to write another article in my series on the Brad Stinn case shortly about the egregious prosecutorial misconduct that these guys engaged in.
Well, another good reason to be very concerned, if not actually to vote her down. I can't tell you how much I appreciate your time. Sidney Powell, thank you. And I hope that you will join us again. Your work at The Observer is most appreciated, as is, of course, your book, Licensed to Lie. Keep it up, and we'll talk with you again very soon.
Thank you, Frank. I appreciate what you're doing, too.
Thank you, ma'am. Fred Fleiss joins us next. We'll talk about matters, intelligence, and otherwise. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
President Obama is holding a Countering Violent Extremism summit this week, but he can't seem to figure out why these extremists are so violent.
ISIL is not Islamic.
Violent, vicious zealots who behead people or randomly shoot a bunch of folks in a deli in Paris.
There is a consistent thread that links together ISIS and Iran and Hamas and Hezbollah and Boko Haram and the Taliban. And it is not simply some abstract violent extremism. It is radical Islam.
The groups the president has chosen to work with appear to be more of the problem than the solution. Boston is supposed to be one of his models for success, yet the Islamic Society of Boston and the Muslim American Society there are riddled with extremists.
If anything, we are less capable today of describing our enemies because they have managed to infiltrate our elites, they've managed to infiltrate our universities, they've managed to infiltrate our State Department, they've managed to infiltrate our think tanks, and increasingly the armed services.
If the president really wants to counter violent extremists, he could start by keeping them out of his Countering Violent Extremism program.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm a firefighter.
A teacher.
I'm a farmer.
I'm a barber.
A waitress.
A mom.
We're all part of your community. Every day we move in and out of each other's busy lives.
It's easy to take for granted all the little moments that make up our everyday.
Some are good,
others not so much.
But that's life. It's when you experience a moment of uncertainty, something or someone's behavior that doesn't seem quite right.
These are the moments to take a pause.
Because if something doesn't feel right, it's probably not. It's not about paranoia
or being afraid.
It's about standing up and protecting our communities.
One detail at a time.
Because a lot of little details can become a pattern.
We
trust our instincts.
Just like you should.
Because only you know what's not supposed to be in your everyday.
So protect your everyday.
If you see something suspicious, say something to local authorities.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined by Fred Flights. He is a senior fellow these days with the Center for Security Policy, our duty expert on matters involving intelligence as they relate to many of the threats we're currently preoccupied with. Fred, of course, spent a career really at the Central Intelligence Agency, working for John Bolton as his chief of staff at the State Department, and not least as a professional staff member of the House Intelligence Committee. It's always a pleasure to have him with us. Welcome back, Fred.
Good to be here, Frank.
You participated in the Defeat Jihad Summit that we had last week. In fact, you were one of the prime movers behind making it happen, and for which I'm very grateful. One of the people who spoke there, about whom you have written, is, of course, the former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. Talk a little bit about his assessment of this global jihad, and particularly his insights as they
stack up against what we've been treated to by the president over the past couple of days at his so-called Countering Violent Extremism Summit?
We hear all these statements about the president refusing to use terms discussing the global jihad movement. He won't use the word jihadist, radical Islam, Islamist. Well, Newt Gingrich had a very simple answer for this. He said the president is hopeless. He's trying to fight an enemy he won't identify in a war he does not understand. It was stunning because Gingrich, and you can listen to Gingrich's comments, it's posted on our website, securefreedom.org, was extremely clear on what we're facing here. A president who, frankly, has lost touch with reality. What I was really taken by, in addition to his comments about Obama, was that Speaker Gingrich says, every time the White House says something insane, and I quote Gingrich in using that word, Hillary Clinton needs to be asked, does she agree with this? She was part of the Obama administration as a Secretary of State. She's thinking of running for president. Does she agree the Taliban is not a terrorist organization? Gingrich asks. Does she agree in not using these terms, jihadist, radical Islam? Radical Islamist terrorist, Islamic terrorism. According to Gingrich, every single day these things are said, someone should be asking Hillary Clinton, do you agree?
An apt question, even if she weren't running for president. She had, of course, served under this president and advanced many of these policies that seem so benighted. Let me play the devil's advocate here, though, with you, Fred, and this is perhaps an exercise in competitive intelligence analysis, really. But my theory is that President Obama actually is not out of touch with reality. He's operating on a different reality. He is convinced that the cause of these Islamists is just, not necessarily the violent piece of it, but the ambition to have the Ummah of Islam, the nation of Islam, coming together, exercising its rightful place in the world, enjoying the respect and the resources that it's entitled to. It's really just part of the kind of fundamental transformation, if you will, of if not the United States, though that would be involved as well, of course, but of the world. Is that not a reasonable alternative hypothesis here?
I think that's exactly right. And we saw this at President Obama's Combating Violent Extremism summit, in which he said yesterday that the jihadists have legitimate economic, political, and historical grievances. It was incredible. Well, what I want to know is, Mr. President, what legitimate economic, political, or historical grievances justifies beheading people or burning them to death?
Well, I'd like to think he would not go that far. He certainly condemned those sorts of actions. But he does always, as he did yesterday, we've talked about this with several of our previous guests, sort of blow smoke, to use a military term, to sort of obscure that the folks who are engaged in this kind of practice actually have a grounding in Islam that he chooses to deny and that arguably are more faithfully acting on its precepts than some of those that one might point to as alternatives or moderate Muslims. They, of course, were not much in evidence, those moderate Muslims, genuine moderate Muslims at the White House CVE exercise. But, Fred, I guess what I'm trying to get at is the global jihad that is upon us, quite clearly, is something that seems to be being aided and abetted in material ways by the administration. Maybe we could talk a little bit about Libya, for example, with the episode this week of the mass beheading of some 21 Christians by Islamic State operatives there. This suggests that that the administration's toppling of Muammar Gaddafi and what has flowed from it is continuing to metastasize, doesn't it?
I think that's right. And as the Senate is being said, has said many times, we change sides in the conflict in Libya. When we turned against Gaddafi, we essentially aligned with these jihadists that took over the government. And just as an aside, let's point out that after this happened, the administration described the Egyptian cops who were beheaded in Libya as Egyptian citizens, not as Egyptian Christians. Now, the administration raced to correct that error, but this is significant. They don't want to admit that there's a religious aspect to this violence by these jihadists. They're promoting a religious Sharia campaign through violence, and the administration is in denial about this.
And I guess, Fred, moving from Libya, where this is in evidence, talk a little bit about Yemen, in which it also has been manifest this week.
Yemen is very troubling because the Houthi rebels who have taken over the government are a proxy of Iran, and they were named as a terrorist group by the Saudi government last year. Now, the reason the Houthis took over is because we removed a despot, but a despot who was loyal to the United States, former President Saleh, and put in someone who was very weak, did not have legitimacy, was brought into power through an election in which he was the only candidate, and we didn't have Saleh leave the country. So now we have jihadists allied with the Shiites in Iran on the doorstep of Saudi Arabia.
And given what we have seen in Saudi Arabia of late, Fred Flights, is it your view that the kind of confidence that we have reposed in them is misplaced? They're under assault now, both from Yemen and from perhaps the north, the Islamic State, maybe through Jordan, maybe directly into the oil fields of Saudi Arabia. And, of course, Iran across the Persian Gulf is a growing danger. But is that shaping up their behavior vis-a-vis us and most especially in terms of cutting off the jihadists that they have long supported, if not at home, certainly around the world?
Well, there's two things I would say to that. First of all, Saudi Arabia has always been a very unsteady ally in the battle against radical Islam because they tolerate Salafis at home who are pushing this battle worldwide. But to whatever extent Saudi Arabia has been a useful ally, the administration has undermined that by its effort to strike a nuclear deal with Iran that the Saudi kingdom strongly opposes. So whether Saudi Arabia is going to erode in terms of its support in fighting the battle against radical Islam because of what's going on at home, that's one factor. But we are exacerbating that by alienating the Saudis with a deal with Iran that the Saudi Arabians think is an existential threat to their existence. I mean, this is uniting the Saudis and the Israelis. They're not working together, so to speak, but it is an existential threat. This nuclear deal is going to leave Iran the capability to make multiple nuclear weapons, even though the administration will say it has rolled back the Iranian nuclear program.
And you have studied this intensively. You've provided excellent commentary on it at National Review and elsewhere, and intelligence videos that you can find as briefings on our website, securefreedom.org. Fred Flights, you are contributing mightily to our understanding of this specific threat of an Iranian nuclear program, but more broadly to our situational awareness about the global jihad. We're very grateful to you. Keep up the great work you're doing at the Center for Security Policy these days, and we'll talk with you again very soon. We'll talk with the rest of you again, I hope, tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.